Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and we are here with Martin Rodriguez Willis.
All right. I always wanted that last name.
Yeah, I figured because this show is going to have a kind of Latin American theme to it that we ought to give you an appropriate name.
Martino, then.
Oh, well.
Martino Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I like it.
You like that?
Okay. Can we go with it? Yeah.
But right. Martine is actually, there's a lot of Martines, and I think that's what it would be. So it'd be Martine Rodriguez.
All right. That's good.
I like using Rodriguez. You know what? Another favorite of mine, I got a buddy, his last name is Escalante. That's a good one.
Oh, wow. Isn't,
you want to be already... Martine Escalante?
No, it's already taken.
Okay. No problem.
I'll stick with it. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, I have an exciting show for today. Of course, I was the first to talk to Leslie Kane after Jose Lay with CEFAA, the Chilean organization that investigates UFOs, after her posting a Huffington Post article on a sighting that they investigated for 2 years and cannot figure out. And what's cool about this is that it was an IR sighting, infrared, from a Navy aircraft, helicopter, and the Navy couldn't figure out what it was. And as you hear in the interview, Leslie and Jose were not very familiar with the other IR cases that we've covered, such as the Puerto Rico one and the one in St. Athens that I thought was the best case of last year. You know, you and I discussed that with Lee. Mm-hmm. So this is exciting. Now, of course, I interviewed Leslie, and then I went to Denver for a few days and then came back, and now I'm only posting today. And in the meantime, I think she's talked to several other people. But still, it was a lot of fun. Now, a couple of things that I wanted to also let people know. So, CEFAA, just so you're really clear, they're a Chilean government agency. They actually are part of the DGAC, which is their equivalent of the FAA. However, they're kind of pretty much overseen by the Chilean Air Force, and they answer to kind of a scientific board that they have there. But as we'll get to in the interview, it's amazing the amount of cooperation they have with their entire government. We will be speaking with Leslie Kane, who is the journalist who wrote it. She's the one who wrote the book. Again, I'm going to get this wrong, but because I always do. UFOs, generals, and other important people talking on the record about UFOs. But you guys are familiar with the book. Great book. New York Times bestseller. She is probably the most, I would say, one of, if not the most internationally mainstream respected UFO researchers or journalists out there in that, you know, she has worked with John Podesta. We get into that actually a little bit as well because, of course, that was such a great story in the last year. She also has worked with a lot of different scientists, Michio Kaku, and a lot of these others, and she gets to, you know, she's taken very seriously by the mainstream science and journalists, media out there.
Right.
So she's she's very unique, which is great. And, of course, this is getting a ton of attention, and so it's pretty exciting.
Is.
Now,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say that Jose Lay is the Director of International Affairs. I've had him on the show a couple times before. You know, he was part of my talk, actually, at MUFON when I was talking about international UFO organizations. But currently, he is a temporary director as well, because the former director, General Ricardo Bermudez, just stepped down recently. He recently retired. So Jose Lai, I think I said it wrong earlier, but it's actually Lai is how you say his last name, is the pro tem director. So when we talk to him, and in relation to the story, so people don't get confused. Now, General Bermudez did make comments in Leslie's story about this case, and he says, you know, they were able in the last couple of years to figure out what it is not. However, they are not sure what it is. And so, you know, it's still a mystery to them. General Bermudez actually spoke at the UFO Congress in 2012 as well. So this is really cool. It's a cool case. The video has been released. It's about 10 minutes in Leslie's story. She's got it embedded with a couple snippets as well. So it's pretty cool. Now, you've seen the video, I'm assuming.
Yes, and right now, from what I understand, it's well over 500,000 views in just a few days.
Yeah, not surprising.
It's really getting a lot of attention.
Sure, it'll just increase more and more as time goes on. Unfortunately, as Leslie says, and you know, I've talked to her, people download it and repost it, and you're not supposed to do that. So I'm sure she's going to get those taken down.
There's dozens and dozens of them. I looked yesterday.
Yeah, and you know what, people? You're not supposed to do that. First of all, it's unethical, and you're not supposed to steal other people's stuff. So it will get taken down. If you do that, you'll get in trouble with YouTube, and you'll get a black mark on your account. And I know this because I get stuff taken down all the time when they steal our stuff. You can't just put, you know, fair use and say I can use it for fair use, because first of all, you don't understand the law. And second of all, you'll still get it taken down and possibly get your account closed. So people sometimes get upset. Hey, man, my account, I'm in trouble because you took it down. Well, you know what? Ask permission. Just like always, ask permission before you share somebody's stuff. I mean, how difficult is that, for goodness sake? So there, I just went on my pedestal. But, you know, it's just been really frustrating for her because, of course, a lot of the people who repost stuff do not comment on it accurately. Now, there has been a metabunk.org story on this case where it's a debunking site, and they say, you know, they looked and they used these plane tracking tools and they figured out it was a couple of planes. Some people have said, oh, it would have been great if you talked to Leslie about that. But we did, because if you read her story, which is lengthy, I understand, there was a French organization which said the same thing, that they thought it was a plane. And during the video, there's an emission by this object of some substance. And they said those are like contrails. And however, I asked them about that, you know, and we go over that in this story, and Leslie did have a comment on that metabunk thing on her Facebook. She says, there's many holes in their theory. First and foremost is that the Chilean authorities would have easily determined this to be the explanation if indeed it were. They had access to all aviation data, obviously. Their goal was to find an explanation if possible, and I'll be back with more. And So it sounds like she's going to have a further comment, and she said she'll let me know when she does. But we do talk about that, because the French proposed that idea as well. And so you'll hear in the interview what Jose has to say about that.
Wow. Yes, this is really interesting, because I was – you know, I had I actually interviewed them as well. Like you just said, they talk to everybody. But you and I have a different style of interviewing. So I encourage listeners who like to listen to both of our shows to please go ahead and listen to both of our shows. This thing was just sent to me today, this Metabunk story. and I haven't had a chance to look it all the way through. It just seems to me that if they research this thing for 2 years, they're not going to make such an obvious mistake as this.
Yeah, and, you know, they used publicly available information. They use this Plane Finder website, which is really cool because UFO researchers use this all the time. You can go look, and it tracks all the planes and other objects like balloons and stuff are all tracked, and even unknowns can be tracked on this thing. So really? You can track all of this, and they used that, and they said, oh, you know, here's the airplane that it is. But, you know, they were very certain, and they said, you know, this is what it was. But at the end, they're like, oh, we had to change it because actually it wasn't that plane. We think it was a different plane. So as certain as they seem, they admit, you know, that they were certain it was one plane, and now they say, oh, no, it's a different one. So they do themselves, you know, do not seem to be certain as to what plane it was. And then we'll hear Jose's explanation as to why he does not think it was a plane at all. So that'll be interesting to hear from him. So, and we'll see if there's any more official explanation. But, of course, this is always what happens. And
especially when something's getting this type of traction.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be the people out there looking for ways to take it apart, which is – I think is good in a way, but they have to really have something really solid. It's just like, for instance, it's like the Chilean government actually releasing this. They wanted to make darn sure that there wasn't an explanation for it before they released it like this. But when someone comes back in 1 day after this, I mean, that's when Metabunk came out 1 day after. That's not doing a lot of research, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think before you're certain, I would think they would want to get a response from the Chilean government. And they're very open to hearing from people. So if these people from Metabunk had reached out, which they may have, I don't know, I'm sure they would get a response. So there will probably be a lot more discussion about all of this. And the thing is with a lot of this stuff, just because something looks similar does not mean that it is certainly it all the time. I would say, just like, you know, the other cases I referred to, like the Puerto Rican one, there are questions, and perhaps there are things that we can't figure out about the movement of, for instance, that particular object. However, when it comes down to the signature, what it looks like, you know, there isn't an explanation for that. And it doesn't move, admittedly, by even the bunkers in a way that what it appears to be would. So lots of questions. Who knows? I mean, all I can do, especially with this Metabunk thing as well, I'm not an expert, so I always try to defer to the experts. And we'll hear from other expert opinion. So, and certainly, Sefa spoke with a large group of experts, and there are other experts, I'm sure, who will weigh in. And that's, you know, all we can do.
Right. Well, I think this whole thing is very exciting.
I'm
really excited about it. And
It's fun when something pops up.
Develops.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did have an interview with MJ Benaez, so don't try to go get him and interview him this week, please, Martin. Wait a few weeks.
I'll hold
but,
back.
But I don't even know if you know who he is. But
absolutely not. No.
I'll tell you what. After you hear this interview, you're gonna want to interview him because he's a young guy. He is kind of writing about, he's written on Mysterious Universe, and he's got his own website and stuff, and kind of like the philosophy of UFOs, and that may sound boring or kind of too nebulous, but I love talking to this guy. It was a lot of fun. I love this interview. I hate having to delay him, hey, we already got one in the bag for next week, so that makes it easy for me. And it's not like we're talking about things that were happening today, like this case, which is something that's more timely. So I've got a great interview lined up for tomorrow. It's one of my favorite in a long time. Although I like a lot of the interviews I've done lately. A lot of people liked our year in review last week, too. That was a lot of fun. So, yeah, got a great interview lined up for next week.
Great. Wow. All right.
So the news. Yeah. I guess I think I've shared enough for the Chilean issue. You got any news for us?
Yes. The Chilean government has released. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, you're kidding.
Something different. No. I better do something different. Oh. Okay, so there was a cigar UFO reported as a watching group. I'm not sure exactly how that title works on that, but anyway, a New York witness at Hopewell Junction recalled a UFO incident. This happened back in 1984, and multiple witnesses claim they lost time. And
really?
This was posted by Roger Marsh. Recently, and so the witnesses were a group of friends, and they were lighting off mortars. Now, that's something you don't hear too often. And when I think of a mortar, I think of like a cannon or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're just like in a battle with their neighbors or something, and they're going to blow them up. That's interesting.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
They shouldn't do that.
No wonder they had missing time.
Right.
Well, it was around the third or fourth shell. Yes, just what I thought. And they heard a very dull, lull bass hum that was directly across from us, as they are saying here in this quote, hovering low off the horizon. We stood there as it hovered, flashing lights, typical for what you think you would see, 1,200 feet across and about 300 to 400 feet wide. It's quite an interesting tale, I would say. And They really think that they're waiting for us to light off another mortar, as you said here. Now, but the whole incident, according to them, was beautiful and exciting. And that's why they contacted MUFON and to tell this whole story about it. And have you looked into this one at all?
Not at all. Obviously, because I post it to the internet, Roger sends them to me. I didn't have time to look it over thoroughly, and perhaps I should have. Certainly, I need to fix that title. But I don't know. The credibility factor kind of decreases, you know.
A little bit.
It sounds like they're in the midst of criminal activity or something.
Well, they have a population there in Hopewell Junction of 376.
Oh, that's not very many people. Yeah.
No, so I think this was just something to let the time go by, you know, shooting mortars. Yeah,
I mean, shooting mortars is pretty dangerous. That could significantly drop the population numbers in that town.
Probably that's what happened. It was probably like a full city of thousands of people when they first started.
Right.
And UFOs came along to save the day.
Shelling, and the UFOs distracted them. But it backfired, because if the UFOs were coming to distract them, they were just like, hey, the UFOs want to see us blow some more stuff up. And so they started blowing up more, inspired by the UFO instead.
Could have been. Well, this guy also explains that his curfew was 9 p.m. Okay, so he gets to shoot off mortars, but he has a curfew. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But he got home at 11:05, and the incident was 8:30, according to him. So he had this missing time.
Yeah. Well, wow. I've got some credibility issues with this one, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So that's the news, huh?
That's reported. Yes. Right from Open Minds TV.
Yes. Yep. One of our fine pieces of work there. So, but yeah, of course, it's been the holiday. Like I said, I was in Colorado. So yeah, not a lot going on, but, I'm sure things are going to kick up again. Did you have any other news?
Oh, no, that's it for me.
Okay.
This Chilean thing has kind of dominated, you know, the UFO scene as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And, yeah. And
so I'm everybody's really got them on. I think I saw that Leslie was on Jimmy Church.
She
must have talked to him like later in the night after I talked to her last week. And then Who knows what else, but she's probably been out there, out and about. I'm surprised Coast didn't have him because I know George Knapp commented or retweeted my story or something, so I know he saw it. So George Knapp occasionally hosts Coast to Coast. I wouldn't doubt if next time he does, he will have her on. But yeah, so we'll be hearing a lot, and in fact, my wonderful listeners will hear more soon, a couple minutes.
That's right. Awesome.
Okay. Well, I hope you stay warm, and I guess you're finally getting your plane tickets for the Congress?
That's right. I'm getting excited.
I know. Oh, my gosh. I'm really busy, but I'm really excited for the Congress this year. It's going to be so much fun. Of course, it's great to see you and others, and just in the midst of it, you know, busy, 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 ordering stuff, and there's so much to do, but yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun, and of course, it's going to be so cool that you're there.
Well, I got to tell you, the listener out there who is kind of like hinging on whether to go or not, I got to tell you, just the hotel alone is like worth going. Even if you stayed in your room or around the grounds, it's like heaven. It's a beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful spot.
And it's like half price they give us because these rooms are expensive. And when you, mm-hmm. you stay there, you see why, because the place is gorgeous. I mean, it's just a really nice place.
Yeah, it's going to be the highlight definitely of this winter because it's 8 degrees here, I believe, right now.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I was in Denver, like I said, and it was 7 degrees when I got there. And I don't like it.
Not a fan of it myself.
Yeah. Coming back here to the 60s, even though it's overcast, is pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
All right. Well, then I guess I will be talking to you later, my friend. Thank you for the news.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Let's go ahead and talk to Leslie and Jose. I am very happy to bring to the show back once again, Leslie Kane and Jose Lay. Hello, welcome back.
Hi, Alejandro. Great to be with you again.
Hello, Alejandro. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you today, especially. Now, this is Thursday. This show's probably going to air Monday, but I'm going to be actually going to Denver for the next few days. As soon as I get back, I'll put this up. But this is the day that you, Leslie, had posted this remarkable story about this case that you all have been looking at CFA and Chile. What's great about this is it's another IR case because we've had a couple interesting government IR cases recently. In the past few years. Did either of you see that one from St. Athan, Wales?
I don't think I did. I saw one from, I think it was Puerto Rico, where the thing goes in the water.
Yeah, there's a good Puerto Rico one. I'll send that St. Athens one to you because this was a police helicopter who got something strange. Yeah. But why don't we start off with just going over the case? So how this came about.
Well, okay, Jose, you want to go ahead with the story?
No, I think you can do it better than I.
Are you serious? You're the one that was
very serious. I mean, you can describe the situation more fluently than I do.
Well, it's only because of the language, no other reason.
Oh, yes, that's right. The language is a barrier.
Anyway, what happened was the Navy, a Navy helicopter flying over the coast of Chile. There were two people in it, one a pilot and one a technician who was testing a camera, a very sophisticated infrared camera, as you mentioned. And they saw this object over the ocean and the technician started to film it. And he got a 10-minute video of this sort of object that looked like two joined circles kind of moving together. And they just kept filming it for about 8 minutes or so. And then suddenly it ejected this massive plume of some kind of substance out the back of it. I mean, really, really huge and long and hot because it was very dark in the infrared. And in the video, you can see the object moving away from this plume. And then a few minutes, a short time later, I'd say less than a minute or something, it did it again. It ejected another plume. And then the video ends because the pilot and his technician had to return to the base, and they said the object kind of disappeared in the clouds. And that's a very short version of the case. And the main thing is for people to go to the Huffington Post website and look at the video. And, you know, Jose, and the follow-up in the story is just about the 2 years of investigations and studies of this film that were done by many experts in many fields in Chile, as well as some analysts in France. And the CEFAA was sort of in charge of that investigation and of coordinating all the various people that were involved. And we discuss in the story how so many conventional explanations for this were ruled out in various ways by various experts. And so they were just kind of left with no explanation for this very bizarre looking craft, and the behavior was so strange that everyone's just baffled by it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Leslie, one question for you, which is kind of remarkable for at least us in the United States, is that the Navy turned over this footage to CEFAA. I mean, in the United States, that's kind of unheard of. I mean, that just wouldn't happen here, right? I mean, you've talked to what would happen here, do you think, if the Navy captured something that was strange?
Well, probably nobody would hear about it here, because right. the difference is that there is a CEFAA in Chile. There is a government agency that's dedicated to investigating UFOs, and it does nothing else. It's got four full-time staff, and everybody in the country knows about it, and all the various branches of the military and the government and the air, you know, the all the agencies in the country are aware of it, and they all respect it, and they all know that when something strange happens, this is who they go to. So it's just sort of the protocol that people do there. And yeah, I think the point you're making, that it's so different from the way we operate here, is really an important one. And it's a point I always want to make when I report on the cases in Chile, which I do pretty regularly. That point can just be driven home over and over again for people to see how different the situation is there from the one we have here. That's really an important aspect of this.
Now, Jose, like, I'm curious what your relationship is, CEFAA's relationship with other branches of the military, in that, you know, here in the United States, a lot of times you hear a lot of stories, and Leslie's probably heard these stories too, of different organizations being kind of stashed with their information, not necessarily willing to share across the board. Do you ever run into that? Do you ever, have that sort of problem where any organization's not willing to share information with you all?
I mean, organizations in Chile unwilling to
correct.
No. We don't have that. On the contrary, I think they love to pull the information, and we serve as the pool. Actually, we gather all the information possible. The each of the branches they do not have the time or the advantages we have to investigate more thoroughly any of the things that caught their attention. So it is easier for them to have a permanent representative from their own branch of the armed forces, be it the Army, Navy or Air Force or police. We have both polices here also joining. And they present the cases to our scientific and technical committees, which is, as you know, they are formed by very well-known scientists here from the main universities in the different disciplines, and also technicians, aeronautical engineers and ground controllers, radar controllers, meteorologists, and things like that, people like that, in the DGAC. So it is easier for them to to send their representative with the case, and the case is analyzed here at the CFAR.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't need to keep their information. I mean, it makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, our government sometimes does some things that don't make sense. But sorry, go ahead, Leslie.
No, I was just going to say, Jose just mentioned the DGAC, which is, some listeners may not know what that is. And that is basically the Civil Aviation Authority, which is the equivalent of the FAA in our country. And the CFAA is part of the DGAC, which is, and the DGAC is part of the Air Force. So it would be the comparable to our country having, within our FAA, having a full-time agency within that department that investigates UFOs. Just so people know what the DGAC is, if Jose refers to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the object, from what I understand, it could not, it was caught on the IR, and they also were able to see it with their eye. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. However, it looks like in the video, when the object is ejecting this material, whatever it is, it looks like they switch from the IR to different types of cameras, different settings, and it couldn't be seen. The whatever was being ejected really very well, if at all, with those other types of cameras, but it could be very well seen with the IRs. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right. It is very strange, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It meant that whatever the material was being ejected was able to emit its own heat. That's why the infrared camera caught it so easily, let's say. And when they switched to high definition, which is the common camera we all know, the material was hardly perceptible.
Mm-hmm.
And partly because it blended in with the clouds.
Oh, yeah, it blended with the clouds.
Because it was white, basically.
Right, white color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, it's just odd, these cases that happen like this. And beyond that, the object was not seen on radar.
No. But the pilot, the crew, when they saw it with the naked eye, they described it as a white color elongated figure with two sort of flashlights or something like that in the middle that are very clearly seen in the infrared.
Mm-hmm.
So it has some kind of a shape, actually.
Now, when the object, like when you all first examined it, the French kind of also thought that perhaps it was an airplane, but the object not being caught on radar is a big, you know, indicator to you all that this was not any sort of normal aircraft, correct?
It's correct. The problem is that the pilot and the technician that was handling the camera, they have many, many hours of flying, and the pilot is a highly trained pilot, very experienced man, and he was not able to say what it was. So it is very doubtful that it could have been an airplane or any conventional craft, because they would have been able to distinguish it clearly.
Right. And you all contacted, in the story you went through, you contacted various parts of your government to figure out if anything was flying in the area, even if perhaps it was some sort of secret project or something.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. But all answers were negative. There was no, in the first place, no airplane flying in the vicinity. That was for sure. No airplane was about to land. It was very unlikely that it could have been a drone, because even to fly a drone in Chile, you need a permission from the DGAC. So there you are. No balloon. We have our own meteorological office that controls the whole country weather-wise. I mean, they are checking constantly, and they are the one who throw the balloons, you know, so we will know it was some kind of balloon. No, not at all. Also, space junk was rejected because we always have a warning from whatever country it belongs to in order to be able to divert the air traffic and not place at any risk the people that are traveling on airplanes in the area. So there you are, Alejandro. We went through all kinds of possibilities.
Now, one of the things, and the French, it was there was an organization in France. I think it's an aeronautical engineering organization. Is that correct? That you also had look at the video?
Yes. Well, that is the French JPON, which is the equivalent to the CFAR, and they operate within the French Space Agency, which is the counterpart of the NASA in the United States. And they have their own analysts, François Louange, and he has his own software and equipment, so on and so forth. And, but the French, they put forward the idea that it might have been a medium-hull aircraft that was approaching to land in Chile, in any of the airports in near Santiago or in Santiago itself. And that is very much, well, I don't know, I think Leslie can explain better the feeling that it caused that report, you know.
Yeah, that had been ruled out. Now, one of the things, it looks like Leslie has disconnected for a second, so hopefully she'll be back here soon. But one of the things that here she is. One of the things that the French had talked about was that there were the expulsions of the whatever was coming out could have been perhaps waste or water that was being expelled before landing. However, that didn't fit. You all didn't feel that fit explanation fit either, correct?
All right. The answer is to that is simple, because if any aircraft needs to dump at any moment any kind of material from the airplane, they have to request permission to the ground control of the DGAC, who in turn will guide the airplane. There are special locations signaled for that purpose. And there was no communication whatsoever, because the crew of the helicopter, they tried twice or three times, I think, twice for sure, to communicate with the aircraft or the engine or the artifact, I don't know how to call it, by the international band, which is universally used, without any answer.
So you couldn't communicate with it, couldn't catch it on radar, and there's nothing scheduled in the area. And as far as the dump went, or whatever that material that came out, there was no authorization for any expulsion of material by any craft. Not that there was any. And what about the physical nature? Leslie, you wrote a bit about the physical nature of whatever came out of that craft also doesn't fit with a normal type of waste or byproduct a plane may emit.
Right. I mean, for one thing, the planes do not emit. If they're going to throw water out, they certainly don't do it at that low altitude. I mean, it's just unheard of. But the other point is that I think is the most obvious one is that water at an altitude of 4,500 feet would not freeze. The problem is it was 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's warm. So what you normally when you see water will either freeze and leave a contrail, which is what we see when we see jets way up in the sky, or water will just fall right down to the ground because it's water. It's a solid object. So in this situation, the gas or whatever it was just seemed to remain suspended in the sky. And if it were water, that would not happen. The water would just immediately plummet right down to the ground. So that's why we can assume that it was some kind of an energetic or gaseous substance that was very hot. That's really all we know about it.
My question for you is, Leslie had written that there was that you all had met about this, people in the government. I guess who all did you meet with? And she kind of talked about maybe there was some disagreement or contention between all of you. How did that go? Like, were people pretty shocked?
Well, let's see. You see, the CFAA is a group of mixed background people, all of them somehow linked to the aeronautical world. And for example, the DGAC has detached several of their best technicians, aeronautical engineers, accident inspectors, and so on and so forth, to join the committee as our technical committee. And then there is this group of university doctorates. They are all university teachers at doctorate level in the different disciplines like nuclear energy, nuclear chemistry, physics, mathematics, astrophysics, astronomers, and so on and so forth. We even have a one national science prize within the committee, which we call scientific committee, just to differentiate from the merely or purely technical stuff. And there are of course the analysts of images and things like that. They look for tricks or problems, you know, in the different videos we receive or photographs. So they are expert in images, digital images mainly. So they are. And when the group met in order to see this case and start giving their opinion, they were really shocked because none of them could actually, till this day, venture a really convincing idea of what could it be. That was what happened. So there was discussion, of course. The people put forward some kind of idea, and he was counter-interrogated, and many theories fell off, and we realized at the end that we will never reach an agreement on what actually that was. But we could agree in many of the things that we all agreed of what it could not be. That was what happened.
And what's interesting is that people who were there, such as an Air Force general who's in charge of the DGAC, I mean, These are some pretty high-level people.
Yes, an active general, and also the representative of each of the branches of the armed forces and the police, they detach high-level officials, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, it is most becoming. They are going to be met by a group of high-level scientists. I'm not trying to to look down on ranks and things like that, but a doctorate is a doctorate, and a lieutenant, or I mean lieutenant, or a corporal, or a general. There are some differences over there in what means rank. In this case, the scientific committee itself demands high officials, at least from the military, and the highest class of the technicians from the DGAC.
Mm-hmm.
So professional reciprocity.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Leslie, I mean, you're able to put this in perspective, at least not only comparing to the United States, but to other countries. It seems like even within your country that the scrutiny that this case was put through is higher than we've seen perhaps ever, at least for a long time.
You mean by the Chileans or?
By the Chileans or any government for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think they always, you know, very thoroughly scrutinize their cases, but perhaps this one took a little longer and involved a much broader range of experts that weighed in on it, just because of the nature of the case and because it was so difficult to explain. I think Jose might confirm whether it was really the most widely kind of studied case they may have had in terms of how many people wrote reports for it and how many different branches were involved in the investigation of it. I think it was very widespread, and they're very thorough. They take their time. It's Chilean, you know, the CEFAL always takes its time with cases. It doesn't rush anything, very careful. And things take time to get done because everybody's busy. Their committee members are all volunteers. So it takes a long time, and they don't like to release anything until the investigation is complete, which I fully respect. But yeah, 2 years has gone by since the event happened. So it's really been scrutinized very carefully. Mm-hmm.
So the object, as far as what it was doing, they observed it for about 9 to 10 minutes, and it was moving at a speed that seemed to be consistent with the speed of the helicopter. I think the witnesses said it was about 50 or so kilometers away. Both of these facts were then confirmed by analysts afterwards. And then the craft just kind of, it was lost sight because that was the only way it was being tracked, I mean, by camera and sight. And once it moved into the clouds, the camera and the crew, I'm guessing, lost sight of it.
Yeah, that's my understanding, Jose, you can confirm. But my understanding is that they actually were ready to return to their base, and they needed to do that. And so they put the camera off, and then they looked again, and the object was kind of disappeared into the clouds because it was so hard to see with the naked eye. Isn't that correct, Jose?
That's right. The object, in their written report, they say the object disappeared among the clouds. They could not see it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they had to return to base anyway.
Mm-hmm. And was the object over water this entire time?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Over water all the time.
Yeah, which is also kind of strange. And then, so when it was last seen, was it moving further out into the...
It seems so. It seems it is moving further in... into the ocean, the Pacific Ocean there.
Now,
but more or less it stayed the same size, though, right, Jose?
Yes, yes. Throughout the whole video, it seems it is in the... It doesn't change the size.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to this case, you all... Well, and other cases, you all are not... ready, and correct me if I'm wrong, to go as far as to say you believe or you have evidence that these are extraterrestrial in nature. Is that correct?
No, we go with a very open mind to the subject matter, because the scientific panel, especially in several of the aeronautical specialists, they are really, really skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an advantage for us, because it helps us, as General Bermudez always said, to keep our feet firmly on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good help. They start by not assuming that it is something extraterrestrial. The method is of investigation is very simple, but at the same time quite logical. We start every investigation by trying to find out man-made or nature-caused the phenomenon under study can be. Until like in this case, we run out of possibilities, you see,
mm-hmm.
of the so-called logical 100% certainties.
Mm-hmm.
Then we declare the happening as a UAP, that is a UFO.
Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that your country, you all have had high-level meetings to discuss what you feel might be the motivations behind these things or the nature of them, and at least to the extent that you all came to a consensus that it does not pose a threat.
Right. In principle, yes. Even in the most dramatic cases we have, like near collision or something like that, we have 102. In every case, the crew themselves, they declared that they did not think there was any hostility involved.
Mm-hmm. What's really interesting with this case, and Leslie, you know, thinking historically, you can help me out with this one, is it seems that technology is really significant here, the IR, in that it couldn't be caught on radar, it could be seen visually, and we often have this issue of, you know, UAPs being seen visually but not caught on radar. But here now we have a new technology that seems to be able to capture these objects as well in the IR.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly did an outstanding job of doing that. And if these two crew members hadn't noticed that object as they did, just because they were poking around with their camera, nobody would have ever known about it. And that certainly makes you wonder what else is out there.
Mm-hmm.
That we never know about, that we, especially in clouds. The interesting thing about this, you know, this particular object, especially, that the whole plume completely looks like a cloud. So if you were to look up in the sky and see something like that, you would just think it was a cloud. So yeah, I think infrared has a really great potential to capture things that we might not otherwise be able to see. And maybe it'll open up some interesting data for us if people start using those cameras more and more. We don't know what's going on inside clouds a lot of the time. And in fact, the SEFA-A has some cases in which objects have been seen concealing themselves in clouds. Isn't that correct, Jose?
Yes, that's right.
Maybe you could describe one of those. And imagine if one had an infrared camera for one of those cases. That would be pretty interesting.
Oh, yes. No, it is a case in Punta Arenas in the far south of Chile, where a pilot that was flying over the Magellan Strait, he saw something hiding within the cloud. That's what he described it. And then after he landed, he saw it again. But this time, it was the cloud was moving against the wind. And in those places, very near the South Pole, the wind blows really, really hard, you know. So, yes, we have a couple of cases that are similar of something within the cloud or behaving like a cloud, but the pilot, they know it cannot be a cloud. It's something very weird, very difficult to explain.
What's interesting with these cases too is that it's kind of like, you know, it's what we're always looking for, especially, you know, military grade or capturing an object on video like this one, being thoroughly analyzed. And that's about as far as where do we go from here, I guess, is the question. Like you said, Jose, you guys were able to determine what it is not, but we can't determine what it is. And it's almost like that's as far as we can go. Where, like, for instance, where do you all go with this case? Is now it's just filed away. I guess this next step was to have Leslie share this with the world, you know, what you all did here in investigating this. But I guess what would be next?
Well, what would be next? I think what we really expect in Chile, for example, at the CFAR to join forces with other countries, especially, for example, in this case, the United States will be fundamental in the investigation because of the huge difference in technology and means available in comparison to ours. And I think perhaps then we will be able to leap forward in a dramatic way. And know much more about this phenomenon that we know it exists.
Well, and Leslie, you are in an interesting position when it comes to this topic, in that there was a lot made, and of course we talked about this a lot in our last show, how this was an important thing in this last year, is John Podesta and this whole, you know, Hillary's campaign talking about UFOs and Hillary talking about possibly investigating them. But she didn't win, surprisingly, to many.
Right.
And you know John Podesta probably better than anyone in this field. I mean, did we lose a possible opportunity there? And do you – or not? And do you foresee any opportunities for the United States to get involved with investigations seriously, like CFAA?
Well, I certainly do think we lost an opportunity just because Hillary Clinton was definitely, I don't know, there's some kind of music there. We did lose an opportunity, Alejandro, I believe, because, you know, Hillary Clinton was certainly open and interested in investigating this. And she made promises that she would look into it, and I believe she would have, especially because John Podesta was working with her and would have likely had some role within the administration. But I don't think that because she didn't win, that the door is closed by any means. And John Podesta remains interested in this issue, and he always will be, as far as I'm concerned. And there may be other things that can happen behind the scenes, or there may even be, in some ways, more things that he can do not being in office. So I am continuing to explore what can happen, and he certainly would like to see something happen on an official level. And every time the issue comes up and I have a chance to interact with him, it's always a different circumstance that he's dealing with in terms of his roles in the government or not in the government. And every situation offers different opportunities and different problems. So I'm hoping that once things calm down a little bit, that we can assess where we might go from here. But I would in no way rule out the possible role that he might be able to play in opening some doors on this issue. I can't imagine in the near future we'll have anything comparable to CFAA, where we are four full-time staff people openly investigating UFOs. But if we could even get one staff person to even do an assessment of whether this is worthy of investigation, that might be a first step that might lead us towards something better. We have to start small here in the United States, unfortunately. So all we can do is just keep working towards trying to make something happen. And I think the CFAA provides a very good model for the world, for all of us, in terms of how an effective agency can operate and how what a good way is for it to work and how it doesn't cost a lot of money either to have an agency like this, because you have these committees, all of who give their time freely. And so it's not an expensive operation.
Right. Well, that's a good takeaway, at least for me, in that, when it comes to Podesta, we obviously saw he was very interested above board in the public, tweeting about UFOs, asking people to ask Hillary about UFOs. And then, you know, once we saw the WikiLeaks, which was, of course, unfortunate that they got out, but it just his conversations even there reinforced that he's very into this topic. So, it's encouraging to hear from you that not to count him out, that he's not done.
Absolutely not. He's not done. I can tell you that.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. And you know what's interesting, what makes me think of when you talk about even if we had one person, a good place to start would be the Puerto Rico video that you mentioned earlier. Because here, just in a nutshell, the details was that there were some guys in Homeland Security. They were, you know, checking on a craft. They used their IR and they were able to catch this object and they didn't know what it was. They took it to their superiors who said they didn't know what it was. They sent it to the Air Force. The Air Force said, we don't know what it is. Take it to some civilian UFO researchers. According to the witnesses, that's what they said. So they did that. The researchers also, they did an extensive, exhaustive study, and they couldn't figure it out. They sent it to the French as well, who looked at it, and NARCAP, who you also know very well. And so amongst all of those people, it remained a mystery. But there's another, finally, they said, this video should not have been released in a statement to Billy Cox, who you know. And
Who said that it shouldn't have been released? Who said
Homeland
that?
Security.
Oh.
So they confirmed at least that it was theirs, but that it didn't go through the proper channels in being released. But at least they confirmed it was real and it was theirs. But it's an example of similar to this where some personnel captured this thing and couldn't figure out what it was. And these are people who use this equipment on a regular basis.
Well, I think what we have to understand is if, and it's always a possibility, right? If it is a craft from somewhere else, there's no way that anyone could ever identify it as a craft from somewhere else. All they can do is eliminate all the other possibilities and say, we don't know what it was, because how can we do any more than that?
Right.
So until, as Jose suggests, we have a much more focused, high-level effort to get to the bottom of the UFO phenomenon, I don't think we're going to be able to do much more than just make the declaration that we don't have any idea what this thing is. But we're never going to be able to say what it is if it is indeed extraterrestrial. We wouldn't be able to say that.
I guess it would be interesting, though, if we continue to get objects that do similar things. So, for instance, objects that we catch on IR that are kind of seemingly observing or near military aircraft, but just cruising by. And if we start to get more and more of that, perhaps we can start to put together some patterns.
That would be fascinating. I hope we get more and more IR cameras involved in this process.
Mm-hmm. And how about with SFAA? Do you have more cases that you're working on that you think are promising, Jose?
Oh, well, now that summer season has started in our country, I guess there will be a lot of sightings like every year, you see. They are not interesting, it's just that here the people is very much conscious of looking up at the sky. Very nice skies here, especially up north, and the phenomenon doesn't cause a panic or anything like that. It's taken quite normal, as it is something that should happen actually, because nobody here thinks that we are the only living creatures or intelligent creatures, that's better, in the universe, in this vast universe. So there is no panic, no paranoia, no nothing of the sort.
Right.
Nothing extraordinary about it.
I always think, especially for people who are interested in this topic, it's just ideal that I get jealous that we wish it was like that here. I guess finally, because we're about running out of time, Leslie, to put this case into perspective, I mean, this is a pretty important case, right?
I think it's very important, Alejandro. I mean, it's unusual, first of all, that you capture a sighting on video for such a long period. It was more than 9 minutes. And that it was on a high-level, sophisticated infrared camera, and they would kind of switch back and forth so you could see the comparison with the HD setting. The fact that it was taken by two very credible, reliable witnesses. And the fact that it's been thoroughly analyzed by official entities. I mean, this is an officially sanctioned video of a UAP. So for all those reasons, I think it's extremely very fascinating and important case. Also, the other thing that's unusual about it is just the bizarre nature of this gigantic plume of gas or whatever it was that came out of the object. It's so strange and it's so bizarre. And it even to me looks almost sort of primitive, like our human conception of what we would imagine a flying saucer from another galaxy to be like, very, very high tech. You would not expect something that we normally think of as a UFO to be ejecting some kind of gaseous substance like this. It's just sort of contradicts our human, perception of what we imagine a UFO would be like if it was from somewhere else.
Like a
So to me,
steampunk UFO.
yeah, it's just very strange and it's so shocking. If you sit and watch the long video that I've included in the article, and you just watch it for 8 minutes and you're kind of plodding along and you think, okay, well, yeah, this thing is moving along. Yeah. And then suddenly it just starts throwing out this massive amount of stuff. It's just jarring. You can hardly believe your eyes. And that to me is, if it didn't have that and it was just the object, it wouldn't mean very much. It's the actual behavior that's so unusual here that really interests me particularly. And it's just so strange. You'd think there would be an explanation for it, but there isn't.
And it's great that Huffington Post allows you a mainstream media outlet, which I think wouldn't happen years ago. Is it allows you to get that information out.
Absolutely. I'm really grateful to the Huffington Post, and I would like to ask the listeners to please click on the article itself rather than just reading it somewhere else, because it means a lot to the Huffington Post to get as many hits as possible when they go all out to do a story like this. And unfortunately, a lot of other websites take the story and they post it and they don't put a link, and there's a lot of stealing that goes on. So I just want to encourage everybody to support the Huffington Post by actually clicking on the article there as opposed to reading it somewhere else.
All right, great. Well, thank you all so much. It's a rare opportunity and a great privilege to be able to talk to both of you. I know you're both busy with your lives and doing other things. So it's great. Thank you both for releasing the information on this case and making the time to talk to me. And I'm really excited since this is day one. What to see, come Monday when we post this video, there'll probably be more stories out about this case and to see where it goes from here.
Well, thanks for having us on, and maybe we can do a little follow-up if some interesting things develop. We'll see.
All right, that'd be great.
It's been very nice talking to you, Alejandro, as usual.
You too. Thank
Nice
you
to see
so
you.
much.
Have a very nice new year.
You too. So far, so good.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much to Jose Lai and Leslie Kane for being on the show and coming on so quickly after Leslie posted her story. Really, we talked right after, within hours of her posting the story, and then getting Jose on from Chile, which was really cool because he sounds like he's not very far. What's funny is his signal from Chile seems better at times than Leslie's, who's in New York City. So That was really great to talk to both of them again today. It's a really interesting case. And of course, despite, you know, some of the people out there, and that always happens, trying to debunk, you know, it makes me think, you know, when you're going through an investigation, you go through the things that it could be and rule them out or confirm that that is what they are. So when a story like this gets posted and then people begin to do their own independent investigation to verify or discredit the claims, you know, you're going to run across the possibilities that the original investigators ran across. So no doubt that many of these people are doing just that. They're running across some of the same things that the Chileans ran across and for whatever reason, you know, discounted those. And it's important, you know, to hear from the original investigators before conclusions are made as to why they ruled this or that out. So as time goes on, you know, I'm sure we're going to hear more and more from this. And as you heard Jose and Leslie say, you know, they want to do a follow-up in the next few weeks here. And we'll do that. We'll get them back and we'll talk about, we'll see how this develops and see what happens here. But yeah, really, really interesting stuff. And I just get so excited because it's wonderful there is an official government organization out there. And CEFA-A is no doubt the most active and the most influential in that they are reaching out to other organizations throughout the world to work together on these cases. And also to motivate other governments. I mentioned earlier, I did a talk on this. I did one at the MUFON Symposium on the different international organizations. And many of the South American organizations say they were inspired by CEFA-A and the Chilean government. And they received aid and were helped. Their organizations, you know, were able to get help from Chile in order to create their own organization. So they're very influential, and perhaps along with France, but France is a little bit more careful about how they introduce what they do so as they stay on good terms with their scientific community, whereas CEFA-A has a little bit more freedom to be more public about their findings and beliefs. So, and they have, it seems, more cooperation with other branches of the government. So for that reason, you know, I would say CEFA-A is one of the most public and important governmental organizations out there investigating UFOs. So, you know, just really appreciate what they do and just honored to have a relationship with that organization too here at Open Minds. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Be sure to follow up on all of this. Of course, you can go to the Huffington Post and see Leslie's story. You can also go to her Facebook page. So she has a personal page, but that she doesn't really do anything on there because she has a page. So, you know, a journalist page. So if you go to Facebook and you search for Leslie Kane, which is K-E-K-E-A-N, go to the pages and look at the pages and find her page there. Even if you find her other, her, you know, personal page, it, she directs you to the other page. And there you'll be able to see discussion on her story and other things that she posts of interest. So be sure to check that out. And you can also Google CEFA-A, C-E-F-A-A, and you'll be able to find out more about them and their organization. We have tons of articles on them as well because they've just done so many important and unique things. So really cool stuff. In fact, most of, if not everything we talked about in this interview, you'll be able to find a story about it at openminds.tv. Other than that, of course, it's the UFO Congress. We're busy, busy, busy getting ready for that and so excited for it because it's going to be a lot of fun. The schedule is complete. Everything on the website is complete and updated. Some of the things you'll see on there you didn't see before is that on Thursday evening, we'll have a panel regarding the Phoenix Lights, and it'll be with people like Richard Dolan, but also Leslie Kane, who did... I'm sorry, a different Leslie. Leslie, or no, Lynn Katai. Also, Lynn Katai, who did the documentary, probably the best documentary, really, it is the best documentary on the Phoenix Lights. Some great interviews and everything. So she'll be part of that panel. Also, part of that panel will be filmmaker James Fox, who made the documentaries, the best documentaries on UFOs in general, besides one of the others that, well, see, I've already... Well, I'll get to that. I'll get to that. What I'm trying to say is that James Fox did Out of the Blue and I Know What I Saw, which are just incredible documentaries. He will be at the conference. He'll be part of this panel on Thursday night. And he will be the keynote speaker. So on Saturday, he'll be talking about this. He'll also be sharing some video of Fife Symington, who was the governor during the Phoenix Lights, who says he also saw them. And James is going to share with us some video of Fife talking about this that no one's seen before. So that's exciting. Fox is also bringing some of the witnesses he interviewed regarding the Phoenix Lights. And he says these are some of the most credible and people who saw the craft up close. So he's looking for people who saw it close as possible. And you know, like, for instance, a mother and a daughter, you know, evidence or witnesses who saw these things with others. So this is going to be really exciting. It's going to be an exclusive. It'll be the first time, you know, something like this has happened at the UFO Congress. And so it's going to be a very unique experience. And we'll have a lot of Q&A in both of those events where you'll be able to ask your own questions if you're present. Now, if you want to come, a lot of people, if not most people, buy tickets at the door, which is fine. You know, we like that. It's a lot more. We make a lot more on those tickets. However, if you want to get discounted tickets, you know, you can do that till the end of the month at UFOCongress.com. So I really implore you, if you want to save some money, go to UFOCongress.com and get your tickets there. Also, you'll find out information about hotels. There are several hotels in the area where you can get a room. Most of these hotels will shuttle you to the host hotel, but the host hotel itself has been sold out for a very long time. It sells out early, so you really got to be an early bird to get in on the host hotel. But still, these other places are really nice, very close, so it shouldn't be a problem. And, you know, that's kind of a cool problem to have, not just for us, that the event is so popular that we fill up, you know, more than just one hotel, but also for the topic in general, the interest. You know, it shows people that, wow, you know, several hotels are booked up because of this event about UFOs. A lot of people are taking it seriously, and they should. I mean, we have, when it comes to abduction, we have Yvonne Smith, who's a licensed therapist. We have Kathleen Martin, who's a licensed in social work. And then we have a PhD and a brain surgeon, essentially, a neuroscientist, also talking about this. And all three of them are going to be doing a panel together as well on just the abduction topic, which is such a strange and an interesting one. But we also have a couple colonels. We have a scientist, a professor from Denmark, who's, you know, been part of a official investigation on UFOs over there for years. So, I mean, it's not small potatoes. This isn't just a bunch of goofballs making up silly stuff. You know, these are important people who have done a lot of hard work, the type of work that if it was in any other topic, the mainstream would take very, very seriously. And more they do, actually. We get a lot of press at the UFO Congress, and typically it is pretty positive. So I'm sure that'll be the same. And that's the other fun thing that to see at our event is there's always some news cameras go around somewhere, or even documentary cameras where people are just capturing interviews. And, you know, all of this information lives not just with open minds, but with the public in general and this field in general. They're able to get more content and interview more people and keep this field going. So very exciting event. It'd be wonderful to have you all there, and I hope you do. So visit UFOCongress.com for more information on that. That's it for the show today. I want to thank Caleb Hanks, as usual, for the open and closed music. And I want to thank you, the listener, for being here. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, I hope you enjoyed today's show. And stay tuned. Like I said earlier, we've already got next week's interview, and it's a great one lined up. So next week will be a lot of fun. So until then, adios, muchachos.